Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
We're in Yoshiah chapter 28. The chapters go back and forth. Before, the previous chapter, we were talking about the coming of the Mashiach. Now we go back to his time. Sometimes it's important that you have two views in mind. Sometimes people go through difficult times right now, but if they see the future, they'll manage because they know in the end it'll work out. So in a certain way, he has this vision of the end of history. You know, right now history didn't look very good. The Jews were being kicked out of the land of Israel. People were corrupt. But he saw the future and he was able to see the Mashiach and how things would work out. And so then a person is able to take the present if they have the long-term goal in mind. The one thing that's pretty relatively famous is the verse 13, the last verse, where it talks about blowing the big shofar. And we mentioned that there's an idea that when the Mashiach will come, there'll be a shofar blast. There'll be a blast of the shofar, and that'll announce it. You know, that'll be the announcement. And to some degree, when we blow the shofar in Rosh Hashanah with the last tekiah, we're always hoping that that'll be it, that that'll turn into the final blast. That's like our prayer, that maybe as we're blowing, maybe we'll hear that big shofar that will blow. And then it describes also the that people will come back, and it talks about lost people. Lost people. And we can relate to that, because there are a lot of lost people, a lot of stray people, a lot of lost people, and it talks about them coming from two different kingdoms, either from Ashur or from Mitzrayim. Anyways, that's the, like I said, the well-known verse there in chapter 27. But now we get back to the present, and the present isn't so pleasant. Sometimes. That's right. He was the 10 tribes had gone on a decline. They had split off from the rest of the people. And in general, when people split off from each other, it's not a good thing. When people don't get along with each other, almost from the very beginning, the fighting amongst the tribes between Yosef and the brothers, that was not a good sign. And what happened was the 10 tribes split off. They split off from the heartland, from the Beit HaMikdash, from Yehuda, and they made their own kingdom. And initially there was the possibility that they could do certain good things, that Hashem, when the 10 tribes split off, there was a great prophet that had agreed they should split off. His name was... No, usually...
I had never heard that.
In the time of King Solomon, there was a great prophet that had predicted that because of some of the excesses. It's an interesting thing. When there's no competition, we don't do well.
It had to be the prophet after Nathan, no?
Achia Hashiloni was the name. Was his name.
Right after Nathan.
Mm-hmm, that's right. Achia Hashiloni was the name of the prophet. But... we don't do well without competition. That's human nature. When a person thinks that they got it made and they've got nothing to worry about and there's no one looking over their shoulder. King Solomon was wise and pious, but his son, Rehoboam, was basically handed the kingdom on a silver platter. He was born in opulence and it was the Navi said, you know, if he had competition, if he had to get people's votes, so to speak, if he had to please the customer a little bit more, he would be a better king. So Hashem created two kingdoms. That was temporarily, and that was to send him a message, but they should have wanted to reconnect. That's a general concept that, you know, we find that in the United States, that when a company has a monopoly, everybody suffers. At least when there's several companies, it keeps them straight. There's something about that's just something that as consumers we've discovered. So Hashem actually made a dual kingdom, made a kingdom of Yosef, and the head of it was Yeravam, who was from the tribe of Yosef. And there is a concept that we need a leader from Rachel and we need a leader from Leah. We have both of these great ladies had what to say. They both had their own unique style, and both of them were destined to have dynasties that would rule the Jewish people. In the ideal world, we need a Mashiach ben Yosef and a Mashiach ben David on the same side. If we could only figure out how to be on the same team and work together, then we'd have it all made up. But they weren't working together. But there was a different problem. And that caused the 10 tribes to go lost and to go off the path. And he spelt it out over here. What was it? So we know that they were eventually worshipped idols. We know that they were removed from the heartland. They were away from the temple. When a person is too far from his spiritual source, it's not good. Like, a person should be close to the temple and the Beit HaMikdash and holy places. If a person is too far away, eventually it fades. We know that. But what was the cause? What was the exact sin that happened to Ephraim? So it's very interesting. He speaks it out over here, and he gives it a hoy. Hoy is one of his expressions. Was like, whoa, you know, this is like... It's almost like an oi, but it's a hoy. We're going to see them later. That was the he says, whoa, like this was really so the way he describes it. So first of all, he describes it as they have a crown of vanity. They think they're big stuff. They think they're God's gift to the world. That's the, he says, the tribe of Yosef, their initial problem was their vanity. We have a tradition that when the tribe split up, Hashem came to the leader of the tribe of Yosef. His name was Yeravam. And he said to Yeravam, you know, Yeravam, you've been straying a little bit. If he said, you know, if you, Yeravam, get it straight, me and the king from the house of David will be in Gan Eden. You're going to be the head honcho. So the tradition has it, Yeravam said, who will be more important, me or the other king? It wasn't enough that he would be in the Garden of Eden with God and the other king, but he said, who's going to be first? And he said, well, the king of the house of David. He said, if that's the case, I don't want to. That's what the Medrash says. In other words, there was a certain arrogance about the house of Ephraim. Yosef himself, I hate to do this because Yosef was a tzaddik, but he's described as like, when he was young, as like curling his hair, you know, like, you know, having a certain vanity, a certain beauty. And he was very handsome, and people that have good looks tend to do that, but sometimes it goes to their head. So what happened here was he says they wear a crown of vanity. A crown is where you wear it on your sleeve. It's worn on your head. Everybody can see the way you walk around. You think, you know, that's a crown of vanity. That's one problem. We've talked about this a little bit. We're challenged by what we call midos. Midos are how to act. In other words, we find it somewhat easy, you know, don't work on Saturday, don't eat pork, don't eat camel, it's very easy to have like certain commandments. But then when you're told, don't be arrogant, that's much harder. Be kind. Be loving. Like, how to control a person's, how their personality is, that's a challenge. And he describes Ephraim as walking around arrogant, walking around thinking that he's geus, of haughtiness. Then the second problem, he says, is shikurei Ephraim. They're drunkards. They indulge themselves. It was a very rich country, the 10 tribes. And instead of seeking the spiritual, they were looking for the drunkard. They were looking to get drunk. They were looking to indulge themselves. This speaks strongly. Many people feel that the Western society is all about just about wealth. It's just about having the fancy car, having the fancy vacation, that's really making it. And it's very easy. If you look at the commercials, that's definitely the message they give you, is that you have to have these things. Or you can't possibly have happiness unless you have the latest car, latest vacation, latest... one of the ironies I find this also is that the clothing styles keep changing. And if you have the old styles, well, it's not good enough. you have to have the latest, you know. And the teenagers, they pick up on this real quick. Like, they wouldn't even consider, like, a style that's a little bit... Now, what's wrong? The clothes keep you warm. I mean, if they fit. But that's not how they look at it. You have to, you know, it's a certain... But it's what our society says, that you have to, you know, you've got to have certain things. And so... As long as the society, people work on indulging themselves, they look on the getting drunk about, that was their downfall. Then he continues on. It sits Novo. This is one of these chapters, I had to work on it too. The words are hard. It's hard words, meaning that just sometimes the words read very easy. Here you got to work on the words a little bit. He describes them as like a young fig. Vitsits novel, Svisi Fartu, like a new sprout. It was, he describes it like the tribe of Yosef was like this new sprout that thought it was going to conquer the world, and in the end it gets crushed. Vitsits novel, Svi. It's also new means like immature, with certain immaturity to it. Asher al Rosh Geshmenim, that's on top of a very fat valley, Halume Yayin. And also, it's full of wine. So, basically, he's describing a kingdom of arrogance, a kingdom of indulgence, a kingdom of drinking wine, and a kingdom of fat. Fat means like, you know, when you would call a person a fat pig or a fat, you know, fat means like they fill themselves up. They just feed themselves. So what is going to happen to this kingdom? Verse 2, behold, chazak v'yamet. There's going to be, usually the Sephardim, they all say that when they want to bless you. When you go to the Torah, they say chazak v'yamet, you know, be strong and, you know, and get strong, even stronger. Like, you know, God should give you strength, you know. So over here, he says the enemy is going to become strong and powerful. Kizerim Barit. And it's going to come like, there's nothing like being in bad weather to feel the power of Hashem. You know, when you're in really strong weather, like you sense the force of Hashem, if you're a person that's ever in that kind of weather. But when the hail is coming down from the whole sky all around you, and it with all of this force. So he's describing the 10 tribes were the stronger of the two kingdoms, and they had a strong army, and they were not, for much of their history, they weren't worried about their neighbors. They defeated countries, and now he's saying that they're going to get a hailstorm. Their enemies are going to strengthen, and it's going to be like a storm of hail. Barad shar ketiv kizera mayim kabirin. And sometimes it rains a little bit, but you can get over it, or you can conquer it. But when the water just keeps on coming, it's going to flood them. They're going to be flooded. Shotvin heniak la'aretz biyad. And it's going to hit them right away. In other words, their land is going to be flooded. This enemy is going to come across them like the hail, like the rain is going to come flooding down. Verse 3. And they'll be trampled. Beregad timasenu. And what's going to be trampled? Their arrogance is going to be trampled. A teres geus, the crown of arrogance they wore. Shikuri Ephraim. So he's emphasizing this. These two components, the one was the arrogance of them, and the two is the drunkenness. The lack of being concerned about spirituality. The land of Israel was a very fertile country. Today, we're used to looking at Israel today. It's not, you know, when all these centuries we didn't live there, the land turned into a desert, and it's not very fertile, and it's only through very hard work that it's growing back. But in the times of the Bible, it was a land flowing with milk and honey. It really was. It was a very abundant land. They didn't have to work very hard. That's everybody's dream, right? To have you don't have to work very hard. Things grow by themselves. And do you remember when the spies brought back the fruits of the land? It was unbelievable. No one had ever seen fruits like that. Big, huge, delicious types of things. So Ephraim had all of that, and they were using it to get drunk. They were using it to, that was their focus. So what's going to happen to this country that's this ripe fig? What's going to happen to it? So the ripe fig is there for the plucking. Another country is going to come swoop down and take away this kingdom. Verse 4, V'haisit tzitzis novo, this little fig, Sisi Farta Shah, Rosh Gate, that's on this country full of fat and full of luxury, it's going to be plucked. Someone's going to come pluck that fig. How do they say, like, that's an apple ripe for something ripe for the plucking or something?
Ripe
for the picking.
Yeah.
Today, the big companies sometimes do that to these small companies. They swallow them up. You know, you have these small companies that are running. There's ways to, like, take them over. So in a certain way, he's describing that's what happened to Ephraim. It was this plump young kingdom, and it's this, you know, immature aleph or whatever, but it's an aleph. It's a sprout. It's a very appealing. The terem kayetz, it's the before, it had a chance to blossom. That's always the tragedy. Maybe when they had gotten older, more mature, they would have figured it out. You know, what's interesting in our times, we consider people kids until, like, most of the time until their late 20s, even, you know, like they're considered, they're dependent, the parents got to take care of them and look after them, and they don't focus on building a family or being independent, or it's almost like they take longer to grow up. Maybe, you know, 200 years ago, 100 years ago, the kid was 14 or 16, he was expected to earn a living and to build a family, and even when they were growing up, they were expected to bring income to the family to help them pay their bills, and our kids, they need income to have a good time. Not blaming my kids, I'm just saying it's a different outlook. Like when you read the stories about how, you know, they were working on the farm, and it doesn't say they worked for an allowance. They would wake up early and they had their chores to do, and they even a short while ago, 50, 60 years, you read about people, whatever they brought home before they were married, they gave to their parents. Because they knew their parents didn't have money, and they, without even question, they gave whatever their wages were to their parents, so that their parents were struggling, and they felt responsible to be part of that. And they, I made a joke with one of my sons who got a job. I said, "So now you're going to help pay my mortgage or whatever." And he didn't appreciate the joke. You know, it's a different outlook. They want money so they can have a good time. But it's just that's the way Ephraim was. It was this unripe fig that was only focused on having a good time. Somebody's going to see it while it's still in their hand. It's an interesting expression. And he's going to swallow it up. It's going to disappear. When you swallow something, it's like gone. That's what happens after you swallow it, you can't see it anymore. So he describes what's going to happen to the kingdom. The fascinating thing is that the Jewish people of Yehuda was conquered many thousands of years ago. And we're still here, and we've been conquered 100 times. Every nation has taken their turn, the Romans and the Greeks and this nation and that nation, and the fact that we are here is such a miracle. And 2,000 years ago there were 10 tribes, not out of the 12, and they were totally gone within one or two generations. They disappeared. We don't know where they are. It's a legend that maybe they're in Africa behind some river somewhere, or, you know, the Sambatyon or the... But they are totally gone. The normal way is that when people are not in their land and they don't have a strong identity, they disappear after a while. They assimilate and they're just gone. Today, in the small towns in the south, if you go looking at the old synagogues, the small communities, they're disappearing. It's very sad. You know, you go to communities where, you know, 100 years ago, 50 years ago, they had a strong Jewish, you know, area. Today, there's like nothing left. They can't get a minyan. The shuls have been boarded up. They closed down. But it's really, the point I'm trying to make is the fact that we're here, we shouldn't take for granted. Hashem is looking after us. We have a mission. We have a goal. We have but the fact that we're able to survive and keep Jewish life going is not a simple thing. The 10 tribes, they disappeared. They were swallowed up. In a short amount of time, they were gone. As other nations, look at the Indians. You don't find them today. There's no Indians left. They were here first. Look at the communists. You know, wasn't that long ago that they were the superpower, and maybe they're gone. Stalin's not around anymore. So it's just people come on the world stage, and then they get swallowed up, and then a short while later they're gone. But he's telling the prophesies, he's giving a prophecy what will happen to Ephraim.
Yes. I don't know if it sounds dismal, but what could one person have done
to prevent it, to prevent that from happening. Like as he is, and trying to demonstrate and embody Midos.
So we're going to see. The same thing is going to happen to the two tribes. In other words, the people always end up following the majority. So after the 10 tribes go down a certain path, the tribe of Yehuda starts to go down that path, and there's one person that stands in the way and tries to make a difference, Chizkiyahu. But there's certain people in history that Hashem puts them in a certain place that they do make the difference. There are many people say that there was the one that made the difference in the last generation in Europe. There was a poor seamstress whose name was Sora Schneerer, who she's the one who started Jewish education for Jewish girls. And until that time, there was not formal Jewish education. The movement she started, they call Beis Yaakov, Beth Jacob, you know, the Beth Jacob movement. And there over in her lifetime, there were over several hundred schools were started, and in places where there never was formal Jewish education for Jewish girls. And she was poor. She wasn't somebody who'd get on the stage in front of hundreds of people, and she just saw what was happening to the women that weren't getting the education and they weren't proud of their Jewishness, and she felt that it could be done, and she did it. And in other words, we have it. There are in history places where individuals have made a difference. So we don't know if any of us will get that option. In other words, of being that person who can. The only thing is, we in Hashem's book, we don't know. Each person is a whole world. So sometimes, if you influence in your own small way in its own place, that could be all that's needed. So we never know. In other words, we it's good to think globally. We'd all love to make the difference to prevent that from happening. They have these conferences every year where they think, how can we save all the assimilated Jews? How can we save society? What can we do? And everybody has all these great ideas, and they have another conference next year with the same problems, right? So it's good to think globally, and somebody will. There are times when people make that difference. And then sometimes we just have to make a difference in our families and our circles that we're in. But I was more commenting just on this word Yivoleno, how it was swallowed up, that it just totally disappeared. Verse 5, Yomahu Yeh Hashem Tzvachos La'Tir Svi. So what will happen? This great kingdom of Ephraim, and it was wealthy, and it was handsome, and it was it was what we were proud of, and it's going to disappear. It was the crown and glory of the Jewish people, the 10 tribes of Ephraim, of Yosef. So what will be left? And so this is the important thing. What is supposed to be our crown? What is supposed to be our pride and glory? You know what our crown is? God. On that day, Be'yomahu Yeh Hashem Tzvachos, our crown, the one that we wear on our forehead, the one that we wear, it's a crown of Hashem. We shouldn't walk around and people sense about us, that guy is arrogant. And you should know, by the way, that we all sense it. Every now and then, there's somebody you meet, and sometimes you'll talk with someone, and that person will have the same reaction that you do. Boy, that guy thinks he's in love with himself, right? And the guy himself isn't aware of it. And sometimes in order to be arrogant, the people really have something to be arrogant about, but that doesn't excuse it. When somebody's arrogant and they have nothing to be arrogant about, it's really bad. But there are people that walk around and they just don't understand that that's not the way Hashem, that's not the crown that we wear, thinking that we are the center of the world, you know, that we are the God's gift to the world. And unfortunately, you do see people that walk around like that, that they think they're the center of their world. But the real center of our world will be Hashem, and which Hashem Tzvachos, he's the power of the multitudes. He's going to be our crown. He's going to be the glory. And it won't be to the whole Jewish people. It'll be to those that are left, unfortunately, only the remnant. And what will be the password? What will be the what does that mean? So some people, they just say, oh, God, you know, they wear it, you know. But there's more to it. Ularuach mishpat. There'll be a spirit of justice. It means that a person will do the right things. That means that they'll they'll meet their commitments. That means they'll take care of the poor. It means that they'll worry about others. They'll do what's right. They won't be corrupt. And it says that they'll stop wars, because since they have a sense of justice, there won't be a need to go to war, and they'll be at the gates. They always would at the gates of the city. That's where they set up a court. In ancient times, that's the way they had it. You had like a walled city, and by the gate you'd have some kind of court or judge, and people could get justice. Usually, people when they did business, there'd be disagreements, and so they would go out. So they would, as soon as they came in the city, there was somebody. If he felt he was wrong, he would go right to the gate and say, you know, this person owes me money. He gypped me. He stole from me. He wasn't honest. And that they were by the gate. You'll find that by Rus. Also, it mentions that the judges were by the gates. It was in a very public way. Justice wasn't something that you had to seek. It was readily available. Even in the desert, they had, you know, every 10th person, every 100th person. In other words, society was set up. People should not be wronged. We have a blessing in the Shemona Esrei where we talk about that, where we really live in an unjust society, that there are people that try to take advantage of others. There are people that sometimes it's companies that lie to you. They advertise falsely. Their products are not what they say they are. Sometimes people promise services, and I know people that have had terrible things with contractors where things were promised them and they never took place. And there isn't always justice. We like to say, oh yeah, you could sue them. Well, if you can afford a lawyer, you could sue them. You know? Or sometimes people feel they were wronged in the business area, where they're not given money that they're owed, or they feel they weren't treated right. And a society says that there needs to be justice, that there is a right and a wrong, and that if somebody is wronged, there needs to be somebody who they can go to. So that's the remnant of the people. They will stick to that. So that sounds pretty good. Sometimes when someone else is punished, so everybody else is good for a few minutes. You know, in class, when that one child gets punished, gets whatever it is, so the rest of the class is very quiet for a few minutes. It doesn't last, and then the rest of the class gets there, right? So that's what's going to happen over here. In other words, when the 10 tribes get zapped, so on that day, the rest of us will be behaving very well. We don't want to get zapped. But then we forget. Then we forget what our purpose is, and what happens? We end up imitating the one that was bad. It's very interesting. We have a parsha in the Torah about the Nazarite. And it says the Nazarite, could be a man or a woman, by the way, what happened is that they'll see the Sota. The Sota was a woman that drank a lot, and because she was drinking, she sinned and she was immoral. So she'll get punished. And the Sota, the Nazar, when he sees that, he has to take a vow. You know what? I didn't realize drinking could be that harmful. I didn't realize that if a person drinks so much, they can lead them to bad judgment, and they would do things that they would never do if they weren't drinking. So the Nazar has to say, okay, I'm going to get this under control. No more wine for 30 days, for this. It usually wasn't a lifetime kind of thing. It was for a minimum of 30 days, sometimes 60 days, and they let their hair grow long. That's what the Nazar did. So the question, though, is if the Nazir saw this woman that had sinned because of drinking, wouldn't that be enough? That he saw that she got punished? And the answer is that it's human nature that when somebody gets punished, it works for a little while. But then afterwards, he might be thinking, you know, he remembers that woman was having a good time when she was drinking. and he might start drinking. He needs to do something else. And so even though when the 10 tribes were punished, we thought, wow, we better behave. But then after time, we start thinking, you know, I remember they were having a pretty good time. It was a lot of fun. So, Gam Eila, these two behind Shagu. It uses the word Shagu, means like we stray. The word Shogeg means by mistake. It's not that we intended to do it, but we started drinking the Kool-Aid or whatever. We're drinking the wine, Uba Shecher, and the beer too. Nothing against, they sometimes call that strong drink. shaker. But it means, it doesn't necessarily have to be wine that you get drunk on. You could get drunk on booze or whiskey or other things. Now, you might think that it was only the simple people that did this, but actually it was the leaders also, Kohen V'Navi, you know, the Book of Congress. You know, these are leaders, supposedly. They're the first ones to sign up for the there's a very high percentage of DUIs amongst politicians and people that are, you know, so over here also the leaders, the Kohen V'Navi, what's hard to imagine is a prophet, even someone that is close to Hashem, gets also eventually shogu b'sheker. They got into that hard drink, nivla meniyayin, and they went corrupt. Shogu b'roya puko plilo. And once that happened, justice stumbled. They no longer were the ideal country that they used to be. Verse 8. Now here he's very a very strong statement. Ki kol shulchanos molokia. He says that all of their tables were full he says vomit and order. I don't know what order is, but I know what toya is. It's basically as bad smelling and as bad as you get, the Bali Makam, Hashem was not in their place, was not there. We view our tables as a place of holiness. When a person eats a meal, there's nothing greater than that. We celebrate with a meal. We have a Thanksgiving, you know, and our Shabbos meal or other meals. And he's saying that when the people started indulging themselves and going after wine and justice was no longer practiced, their tables were full of, vomit and all kinds of not good stuff. Nasty stuff, that's right, that's right. So what are we going to do? Society is corrupt. People are only thinking about drinking and partying, and they're not taking care of the poor. How can we save society? Esmi Yoredeh, who are we going to teach? Esmi Yavin Shemua, who do we have a chance? So once people are into the party lifestyle, it's very hard to wean them from it. So the only one we have a chance with are the little ones. The ones, if we teach the young before they, this is very much what we strive to do, is to teach children when they're young. You teach them right, and then even when they get old, they won't stray. In other words, you got to get them when they're young. You got to teach them when they're young. You teach them right, and they'll hopefully be able to withstand the powers that be. What's happened is that early on in the United States, they discovered that when you send kids, even good children, to college, to mixed dorms and things, that even children that are brought up in observant lifestyle, they can't always withstand it. They say today that 1 in 4 Orthodox kids that goes to a full-time college ends up not religious, not some of them intermarried or whatever. They don't. It's very, very hard to fight against a luxurious society. I mean, you talk to a 20-year-old boy, and you put him in that environment. It looks very. You tell him, well, think about spirituality, think about the Jewish people. He's thinking about they're having a good time. It's hard to compete. He's not thinking about. So there are different answers to it in the. What they call the right-wing community, what they call the black hat community. Mm-hmm. So what they do is they don't usually have their kids go to a full-time college. They'll have them go to night school. They'll have them study a year or two in a colo before they go out in the world. And by doing so, they, 95% or 99% are strong enough at that point that when they do go out in the world, they don't go running after the pod and basically kids that go to college, they're going to be promiscuous and they're going to try drugs and they're going to experience that lifestyle, and a very small percentage after trying it immediately pull away from it, and it's just a very it's a big challenge. If we put so much effort into our children, can we confirm that they're ready, so that, you know, to take it on. And so that's why what he's saying, in a certain way, we got to start when they're young. We got to make them strong. We got to give them the ability to. But the only way to do that is before they're poisoned, so to speak, from that society. But that's there's a debate about that. Some people argue if you push off college too far, what's going to be with your career, and you won't be able to make millions of dollars. And but that's the reason why in some Orthodox circles they push off going to college. Not because nothing wrong with going to college. In fact, you know, Jews have always made a good living. My son, the doctor, right? But it's just that the environment of the universities in the Western countries are such that it's very hard to protect your children, that they shouldn't get totally involved in that lifestyle. It's interesting because you had those two, the Boston bombers were, you know, that nobody really knows what happened with them. It wasn't necessarily through college, but it's just there are a lot of dangers out there. People prey on young minds, you know, and parents try to, when I say young, it's because when people are older, they've already seen what's out there and they've come to a certain maturity about what they want and what they need. But when people are young, everything looks different to them and they're pulled in different directions. Some people are pulled towards jihad and they'll go blow themselves up and destroy the world. And other people are pulled towards drugs and other types of things. And so he says you got to start when they're young. What was the problem? Kitzav with Tzav, why couldn't you talk to the older people? So the older people, what they were saying is, oh no, another commandment? Kitzav with Tzav. The word tzav is from the word vitzivanu, a commandment. Oh, no, another command and another command. Kav l'kav, another mitzvah, another mitzvah, another... All you want is mitzvah. It's almost like another tax. And so the old people, they were looking at the mitzvahs like another one. Like they didn't... There was a Hasidic movement. One of the things that they emphasized was how you get joy from doing a mitzvah. And... that movement stopped to some degree some of the assimilation that had occurred with the Jewish people. In other words, you had people for hundreds of years that just did mitzvahs, and then they opened the ghetto walls and people said, why do I got to do this for? Why do I got to? Well, your parents kept kosher, so you keep kosher. I don't need that. I'd rather go eat Chinese or whatever, right? It was just another, I can't eat this, I can't eat that, I can't do this, I can't do that, I can't do this. That's the way they viewed it, as one other burden rather than a joy. And it's always a danger sign if a person... There are people that do mitzvahs because they feel they're supposed to, but they don't enjoy it. That's a problem. Like, it's good that they do it, but a wind can come along and blow them off. A person has to try to find a way to enjoy mitzvahs. He has to try to find a way to see where it's not just another one, it's tzav l'tzav, kav l'kav, kav l'kav. It's like the Hebrew sounds very interesting over here. Again, we read a verse, ki tzav l'tzav, a command, another command, a kav l'kav, zir sham, a little one, a little more, more davening, more this. Verse 11. It's like you're speaking a different language. You try to speak to those people and they, you know, try to tell them about mitzvahs. You might as well talk Spanish to them or some other language. You're talking Chinese. They don't. It's a different language. Verse 12. Oh, leave me alone. I just want a little rest. I want to relax. There's too much work. They're not going to listen. They want the easy life. No one's going to listen. Another command. You got to do this. You got to do that. Verse 13. Vayulhem Dvar Hashem. And the words of Hashem are tzav l'tzav, tzav l'kav l'kav, kav l'zirsham, zirsham, l'man yelcha, and it's going to be a stumbling block for them, because they view it as a burden. Rabbi Feinstein, of blessed memory, was here in the 20s and 30s, when the people came from the European countries who were very observant and very Orthodox, and at that time a lot of their children immediately assimilated and gave up their Judaism. And people were, why is this happening? And so he said that the older generation, they kept Judaism, but they would come home and they would, there's a Yiddish word, they'd give a krek, they would kvetch, and they would say, oh, schwer zu sein Yid, it's hard to be Jewish. Jewish is hard. And the kids would say, it's hard. Who needs this? In other words, like, I don't want it. It's a stumbling block. If you commit another one, and I got to go to shul again, I got to daven again, I got to eat this, I got to eat that, I got to do this. It became a stumbling block to them. And so by looking at it as an obligation and not seeing the value in it, but Nakshu, they were stumbled and they got trapped. Verse 14, so what should we do? L'kein shimu d'var Hashem, anshei tziyum. So therefore, this is what you need to do. Listen to the word of the Almighty, the men of Zion. Moshe Le'am has that, the leaders, and that are in Yerushalayim. 15. Ki amartem karsanu bris es mavis. You have said, we're on a path where we've made a covenant of death. The Im Shol, and we made a covenant with the netherworld, with the grave. In other words, the path that they're going on, which was this of drunkenness and other things, people have to listen and they have to understand the seriousness of where it's leading. They're overflowing, they're heading in a direction where once they go, they'll never come back. And they're going in a path of falseness and lies. And we've hidden behind that. And therefore, we need to take action. There needs to be a change. I think we'll stop here on verse 16 to find out the solution. But again, he's telling them, he's warning them of what could happen. And we always view the prophet as that, you know, with the hoy, you know, look what's going on, you drunkards, you arrogance, you got to do something, you got to behave, you got to fix it, you got to grow out of it. Okay, so we're at chapter 28, verse 16.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.